It's Saturday, August 8th, 2009, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today, Geeks on Geek Speak, we're doing Geek News and your questions and comments about technology. And we might, if we can pull it together, have a special guest on, which I'll talk about more if that happens. In any case, the bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today on Geek Speak, we are starting with Geek News, as we do every week. In the second half, we'll invite you to participate in the call. We do have a special guest lined up, and we're just having some trouble finding him. But hey, trouble is the underlying concept today, because the Geek Speak website is non-editable because of my late night sysadmin inabilities. Hopefully when Miles gets back, everything will be sorted out, but I'm sure I'll get something up later today. Geekspear and KOSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. In the second half, you're welcome to give us a call. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. Let me just let you know that you can participate all the time on our website. In fact, our forums are actually functional fine. So you can go to geekspeak.org, click on our forums, and ask us questions and such that way. And of course, you can send us email through the site as well. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have geeks. Jesse Wilkins, mobile computer support at wilkinsconsulting.us.
Good morning.
So you've got one of the .us domains, huh?
I do. It's, you know, United States, right?
Sure. That's where you, and that's your service area, right?
Yeah,
you help anybody in
there. Of course.
All right. And, of course, we have regular geek Al Luckow, a new media architect. Good morning.
Hi.
All right. So we are working on getting our guest in via Skype, but mm-hmm. We've got tons of news stories. And, Al, since you weren't here last week, we have a little glut in the robot story news. And please fill us in. What's going on?
Well, let's see. Robots. I don't even know where to start. How about we start in the sewer? Because that's a good place to start.
Most things finish there, but
yeah.
Let's start there.
That
sounds good.
Let's start in the sewer. There's this thing they're calling. It's sort of like a proposal. It's called an urban mole. Or a sewer robot. And the idea is that this thing will go around and deliver packages through the sewers.
Mm. What do you mean deliver packages?
Well,
we talked recently about a sewer system being used for laying fiber optic lines.
Right.
So this is more physical, more tangible.
Well, this particular one, it's the brainchild of designer Philip Hermes. And it's a capsule that travels through existing networks of underground pipes in order to transport packages. I mean, they say groceries.
So what happens?
You know, I don't know if I want my groceries coming through the sewer.
So your toilet's flush handle goes up now and you get received packages that way?
Well, I don't know exactly what the deal is, but that's the whole idea. And it's won this huge contest. It placed second in the VisionWorks contest, a logistics competition sponsored by Bayer Material Science. They asked participants to envision transportation solutions for 2020, and the urban mole came in second.
Wow.
The first one was a building that grows food on its walls, which is cool. But
that sounds more appealing to me than a
it's no subjects. Underground robot.
No.
you know, but I mean,
what's it called? Like the sewer urchin, or
it's called urban mole.
Urban mole,
and it's I don't know. You know, that's a little weird.
What will they think of next? Huh?
Actually,
I think
just as an aside,
yeah.
our guest is on there. So
okay, great. We'll get this.
We'll do it anyhow. Okay. The other thing, let's see. There's so much to talk about robots here that it's. How about this? Okay, now we've come out of the sewer, and there's a thing called the Sega Pekopa robot plant. Okay.
Okay.
So, as if your life isn't hectic or exciting enough, now you can get a mechanical moving stick to spice things up.
What?
Yeah, it's just this. Plant. You know what I'm thinking of is, you know those little flowers that dance to music?
Yes, I totally know what you're talking about.
Well,
little pot has a battery in it.
Well, this is like taking that like on steroids because it's an actual robot and it responds to your voice, but you've got to like keep talking to it and do all these things or the thing dies.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
and the puddles fall off? I mean, it's not a real plant, right?
It just sort of dies. I don't know if you...
kind of like our segues right now with our stress of putting our guests.
Yeah, I don't know if you have like to, you don't have to water it or anything, but they've got videos on YouTube, and we'll have this on our site
eventually.
It's I found it on Ogizmo, it shows all these people that are talking to this plant. You know,
keeping it alive with their voice.
Yes,
it's kind of a love story.
It's I can kill plants. You know. Any, I don't know that you need to go out and spend money to buy a robot to talk to. You know, forget this robot plant.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
You know what?
Right?
If your life is at that point where you've got to talk to a robot plant,
you need to go out more.
You need to get. You know, there's.
All right. So that plant's out of the picture. The robot's useless. It's no good compared to a sewer.
Urban mole, maybe a little bit
definitely
better.
Okay. Dying plant, not so much.
And then I have another.
Well, you know what? Let's take a break on that first, and I'm going to go ahead and invite Ben to join us. Ben recorded something for us for the show, so here we go.
Oh, okay, great.
Hey, Lyle. Hey, listeners. Sorry I couldn't make it today, but I am phoning in some awesome news, and that's that the Kepler mission actually works. We've actually gotten some results back. We've covered it on the show a couple times before, but briefly, the Kepler mission is a satellite that orbits the Earth, and it looks at different stars. Now, the theory is that when we see these dips in the light output of these stars, we can actually infer the existence of a planet. And we've actually found one with Kepler, and it's about the size of Jupiter, and it passed in front of the star, and we saw a nice dip in the light output of the star that it was around, which is HAT P7. Now, Kepler's measurements actually have far less noise in them because we're not looking through the haze of our atmosphere. Kepler's actually out in space, so it doesn't have our atmosphere to distort its results. Now, the gas giant that Kepler measured blocked about 1% of the light of the star. You can imagine that an Earth-sized body would probably block much less light. Well, it turns out that Kepler didn't just see the dip of light from the star when the planet went in front of it. It also saw the dip of light when the planet went behind the star. When the planet was no longer reflecting light, it actually saw that dip. And that light output would be about the same amount as an Earth planet, which means that eventually, if we keep looking, we're probably going to find an Earth planet, because Kepler has such great resolution. Anyway, very, very cool stuff. I'm really excited about it. 10 days. It's only been 10 days since Kepler started recording and looking for these things, and here we are already with some actual results. Anyway, I'll see you guys all next week. Bye.
Very cool to be able to get him in via recording.
It was like he was right here, right next to me. I felt his presence.
Did you get that itchy burning sensation too?
Yeah, that presence you feel when he's in your room.
Yeah, totally, I felt that. That's totally mean. We can't attack him when he's not here.
All right,
can't defend himself.
Okay.
Let's attack someone else.
Yeah.
Jesse, hi.
Oh, hey, what's up?
What's your news story?
Oh, man. Okay, so pretty interesting. Just ran across a cool little video on a holographic display, and they use two Wii remotes to basically sense where your hand is positioned, and then a display displays a hologram.
Okay, but can we assume that it's not actually a hologram? You have to wear, like, glasses or something?
They don't mention that here, so I can't really tell. I'm assuming they're using some kind of projection type of technology. They don't mention it, so we'll have to do some more research into it.
Okay.
But what it does, it also uses an ultrasound airborne tactile display.
Oh, neat. So it has some texture to it.
Basically, it looks like air blows at different parts of your hand, based off of where the Wii Remote senses your hand is sitting based off of how you're interacting with the hologram.
Ooh.
Pretty
it's,
neat.
So tactile
it's
hologram.
It's ultrasound vibrations. So you can tell.
So as you move your hand through this non-existing thing, you know where it is.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. I watched this video that when the drop falls, you know, in 3D, because it's a hologram, all right, and you have your hand out there, and the drop hits your hand, the system knows where your hand is in space, and it's got this ultrasonic panel that shoots these ultrasonic waves that make the sensation happen
at that point.
The drop would touch your hand.
That's
so rather than being air,
speakers too.
Rather than being air, it's actually this ultrasonic.
It's sound, basically. Because what's happening is the ultrasonic is canceling itself, and you get lower frequency sound, which you can actually feel.
So you can feel.
You can feel the sound. So it would be a good way to describe it. It's a little not exactly right, but very cool.
So yeah. The question would be then, how much does this cost? Is it feasible? And then in what applications can we actually use it?
Well, having the ability to have some kind of tactile bounce back in air is pretty cool.
Can anybody say holodeck?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems like that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's a primitive, maybe it's just a drop right now, but pretty soon it's going to be.
But eventually, right?
You know, some big landscape with, you know, fighting Klingons with giant axes.
Yeah, when? Stuff. When is that going to happen now? In the future when we have jetpacks?
We'll probably all be old and
flying cars.
Not even be interested in it anymore. I don't know. Or maybe we'll be in jetpacks. Or maybe we will be interested. I don't know.
All right. So on the site physics.org, there is this great article about virtual worlds, and they're, you know, normally online entertainment kind of things, games and stuff like that. But they're actually becoming now kind of a place for scientific collaboration. Traditionally, you get a group of scientists together. And of course, the internet was kind of started with this, but you get a group of scientists together in a room and start working on a certain project. That lab kind of environment normally exists in a physical world, but we've had for years this ability to have multiple lab research areas being connected, their data connected, their communication connected, and now they're using Second Life to meet and greet and interact and participate. And these people that are doing this, California Institute of Technology, Princeton, Drexel University, Massachusetts Institute of Tech, MIT, and they're all forming these organizations in virtual space projects.
They're meeting there.
Yeah.
They're just saying, hey, let's meet. And
have some kind of avatar representation.
I'm going to be the giant beast with fangs, and you can be the beautiful woman.
But solving scientific problems.
And then we'll talk about, you know, physics.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically that's their meeting place.
And the general idea is that the only place this group that forms exists. You know, mm-hmm. that normally you have a lab environment and you kind of label that as some research center, right? Mm-hmm. This research center only exists in the virtual space, which is kind of cool.
So it's the only place you can go.
Yeah, you don't. There's no conference or anything.
There's
that.
No
that's
room. There's.
Right. So that's pretty cool. Now, but to totally counter that, this kind of negative and fairly well written kind of comment about social environments not being so great. So the concept is cozy social networks are stifling innovation. And the basic idea is that if you're in a social network with a whole bunch of peers like Facebook or something like that, and everybody's kind of writing something and repeating what the other person says, and there's kind of a internal click of general, this is what's accepted, crazy thoughts don't fit in that space. So the idea of a real innovative idea won't fit in very well. And so this scientist, Victor Meyer Schonberger of the National University of Singapore, says that the software developers that work in social networks in which everyone is closely linked together, this is meaning software development, like open source software development, the overabundance of connections through which information travels reduces diversity and keeps radical ideas from taking hold. Which sounds pretty right on, except that people are meeting in cyberspace to...
So this guy's saying the social network stuff is stifling innovation, and then there's these other places that's the only place the innovation is
assuming
happening.
That those people are innovating. So that's the question is it just a social meet and greet in the virtual space, or are they actually producing?
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see how when you're working alone, you know, you don't have all these other people saying, well, I don't like brown. Can you make it, you know, basically, you know, when you have design by consensus is where I would relate to it. I can kind of understand that you kind of need to get away from a group. But
yes.
I think social networking really is a phenomenon that I think brings people together. And
I get that. And I also get what the science is saying, because imagine that I've got some kind of harebrained idea. And mm-hmm. I might come over to your place some night mm-hmm. and have a beer and chat about mm-hmm. it with you, because I'm in a safe environment. But if I go up to my 150 Facebook people
right.
and mention it, it's going to get shot down because mm-hmm. it sounds crazy.
Right.
It probably is.
Right.
So that idea that early thought of innovation is not necessarily something you want to publish in some mm-hmm. sense,
right.
you're going to have a boundary and a barrier there. But
yeah.
I still think it holds a function, that large group holds a function.
I've got to comment on that too then.
Yeah.
I mean, would you walk up to like a big crowd of people, like your peers at a convention, and say, hey, everybody, here's an idea, or would you mention it online?
So or the radio show.
It's less risky by not actually interacting
true.
With somebody.
That's true.
I know I act differently, say, online versus in person.
Right. So there's another level of social norm in the mm-hmm. online space
definitely.
Than in the physical space.
And so it's easier to write a sentence than it is to like go out and stand in front of everybody and talk.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I think the web really does bring out, you know, I mean, how many people go on to these websites and speak their mind when maybe they wouldn't quite do mm-hmm. that if they were in front of somebody.
Definitely.
Right.
You know, I mean, maybe a lot of things get said that wouldn't be said. Not that they're good, but, you know, it's funny. It's like a point counterpoint kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
One group, I mean, and it's probably something that's kind of starting to happen. You know, you're getting all this social media. People are going to say, oh, that's no good. And other people are like, that's great. You know, we've got this new thing forming.
Yeah, definitely. You know? All right. Well, you weren't done with robots, Al, and
God forbid
me stopping you.
I
from
did
talking
have
about
the other one other robot thing related. Related. Hey, there's something new for Geek Speak. It's a musical robot hooked on social media, and this thing.
So it's a social robot using one of these social web spaces.
So they've basically built this musical robot. And it is, you know, members of Facebook, and it's got all these different kinds of, you know, subscriptions. And it...
so it acts like a real
It knows when people are friending it. It, you know, it knows when people are talking about it. And it's got a little device meter on it that tells you what kind of mood it's in, you know, when people are talking about it.
So it's
called the Cybrafon... Cyberfon at cyberfon.com, and it's a project from an Edinburgh-based artist collective called mm-hmm. Found.
Oh, I've heard of Found,
which is has member the people involved are Ziggy Campbell, Simon Kirby, and Tommy Perman. And this thing just basically it's an internet addict, and it spends more time online than you do.
Impossible.
And just
So the general idea is that when you're participating in these social networks, the idea is that you befriend people, right? So
mm-hmm.
I'll find somebody that I kind of know maybe, and I'll befriend them, and then they
right.
say yes, and then we're connected. So this robot's doing that.
Uh-huh.
And it's also like sending messages or receiving messages from people.
Yeah.
And as it gets poked and pinged and,
uh-huh.
and added, it goes up in popularity, it starts smiling.
Right.
And when it doesn't, it gets sad.
Yeah, and it's got like music, so it plays like depressing music when nobody's tweeting about it or whatever. And then when it's happy, it plays happy music.
So it should be extremely happy right now because it's being broadcast all up and down the Central Coast, but probably knows nothing about radio.
I don't know about that. But
maybe it's a podcast.
We should definitely mention
the website has a meter that, you know, goes back and forth and
right.
Does that. But, I mean, why waste time on Facebook and Twitter when you can build a machine to do it for you?
Well, that's an interesting point. You
that's
know,
the,
how
the whole
could,
idea.
How could government, how could businesses actually use... the intelligence of this to, you know, respond instantly to posts about them on the internet, or to, you know, track down cyber criminals based off of them talking about certain subjects.
Well, so using this as practicality rather than as art?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, you're too practical.
Oh, man.
I like the band idea.
Uh-huh. Definitely, yeah.
So.
All right. You got another one, Jesse?
Nah, you don't.
Not so much. Al, okay, Al, it's you. You're the star today.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, let's see. I've been hooked on.
We could invite our guest on if you'd like.
Hey,
one more news story, and then we'll
one
do
more
that.
News story. Okay, there's something that's kind of cool that I actually wanted to bring up that I've been trying to bring up on Geek Speak a few times, and you keep glossing over this story.
Okay, we'll skip this one.
No, no, it's an ink calendar. Okay,
Wait, like physical calendar?
It's a calendar that's made out of this paper, that's special paper, okay? And it's got one spot in the top where you drop your ink. It's got a little bottle, and you put the ink on it. And then during the course of the month, the ink seeps into the paper at the same rate the days change. And as the month goes on, the entire calendar gets filled up.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it was...
Do you have one?
It's being exhibited at the Circo de Bellas Artes in Madrid.
Is this something you can buy?
It sure looked like a product to me.
Wow.
It says the ink is absorbed slowly and the numbers in the calendar are printed. You know, basically kind of print as the ink
right.
is absorbed.
Yeah, totally.
So one a day, it fills with the ink. The ink colors are based, you know, on a spectrum which relate to color temperature scales. So each month has a different color as you go. So they've done it for a full year.
Nice.
The colors range from dark blue in December to three shades of green in spring or orange and red in summer. So this is a neat thing.
So can you use this calendar for, I mean, you can't plan future events on it because you can't write in it, but is it writable after that too?
It's like a big sheet of paper. And the numbers are all connected with this thin layer of membrane paper that slowly seeps the ink.
Oh, that's really cool.
Which is pretty cool.
Why didn't you bring that up before, Al?
Why I oughta.
See, Lyle sees our stories and then he decides.
I have time to read.
Ink calendar, what the heck is that? Nobody cares about that.
A couple weeks ago, we talked a lot about podcasts that we listened to. We started listing them out, and we got so excited about the different podcasts and started feeding off each other that it got kind of stuck in a loop. We decided to break that out by actually inviting one of our favorite podcasters onto the show. And Drabblecast, Al, do you want to introduce Drabblecast?
Oh, yeah. This is something that I've been involved with, In his podcast, Drabblecast's Norm Sherman collides normalcy with the bizarre and odd in a delightfully enticing manner. Described as short stories at the far side of weird, this podcast is one of the most unique out there, combining great flash fiction with artfully crafted sound effects and music.
And Norm, welcome to Geek Speak. Norm, hello. Oh, this is so unfortunate.
He's very quiet.
He's really way too quiet.
Yeah.
Maybe he, I've had him on the call for like 20 minutes, so maybe he decided to leave
us. Could he have fallen asleep?
Yeah, he could have. Norm, are you with us? Oh, a drat. Oh, he's typing, but he's not saying hello.
Well, this podcast is a really interesting thing. Drabblecast.org.
You know what we can do is I can actually play it for us right now.
Play what?
Play part of his podcast from last week that was kind of fitting for the Geek Speak show.
Yeah.
So we'll go ahead and do that while we figure out what's going on.
I guarantee you guys are going to love this podcast.
This was a contest that they worked on for a while. They asked people to submit stories about, well, what else, but Nigerian. Oh, hi. Oh, he's calling us back. Let's see if we can answer this real quick. Norm?
Technology,
I think Norm's got problems with his audio. So we'll play this from his show.
Hey, Lyle. Hey, listeners.
No, that's the wrong one. Oh, my gosh. Man, you know what?
We're all wearing clown suits today, by the way. And we came in one car, and we all piled out.
We had 400 people.
We've got rubber noses, big feet on right now. So just imagine that's what's going on in the studio.
It's worse than this. I can't even open the file.
Is that thing supposed to be smoking over there?
Oh, I hope not. All right, so Norm's mic's not working, maybe. Maybe my computer's broken. But, you know, one thing I know I can do right now is go ahead and read some of the stuff we need to read for KOSP. So let's do that.
Okay.
Geek Speak on KOSP, supported by Great Infusions Coffee Beanery and Espresso Machinery Showroom, offering artisans coffee, coffee makers, and specializing home espresso machines, parts, and repairs. Located at 317 Potrero Street on the corner of River Street in Santa Cruz, or online at greatinfusions.com. And we're so sorry the show is like this today. GeekSpeak on KOSP is also supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at SantaCruzElectronics.com. All right, a little bit of Drabblecast, though we might not even have him on the show, so that'd be a little strange.
Well, the winner of the 2009 Drabblecast Nigerian Scam Spam email writing contest
is Mr. Bo Kier. Dear earthly residenter, my wish to your home is not haunting. I know rattling chains and howls is causing marital stress and wetting of beds. My name is Ubuntu Nissan Honda and inhabit your condo. I have taken control of PC to send heartful truths. My luck was to fall from balloon into your community while circling globe for purpose to share glory ambassador to Nigeria. A tragedy, yes, for family, and not I continue to make tragedy no longer for you and children. Wish is for freedom from soul trap that is your excellent furnishings. My sister, App Store Nissan Honda, is powerful Nigerian wish doctor. She is person for best releasing of my trapped spirit. Please touch her B in at 345 Swazu Pines Boulevard, Bauchi, Nigeria, Arfika. She charges sacred sum of 200 American green dollars. Make out check to my name, Ubuntu Nissan Honda. She will shed tears and know it as signal her lost brother. Your family's end to suffering will be her joy. 200 is a promissory chicken blood and earwax candle deposit and will be returned as I do to safari that lies beyond our knowing. In faith of your presidential, Ubuntu Nissan Honda, Phantom and Friend.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Now, the thing about the Drabblecast is that it really is kind of a created by one person kind of show where he plays music, he does characters, the whole deal. Hi, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Thanks for calling in, Norm.
All right. There he is.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So about that.
We just played from the Toast episode of your show, the winner of the Nigerian spam story.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't ask for permission first, so sorry about that. But it was really good, and we laughed a little bit. So how do you do the podcast?
The technical things, or
well, I don't. You know, I don't want to ask you something dumb like where to get your ideas, because it's obvious you've sold your soul to the devil to be so funny. But I just don't understand how somebody could be so funny and musically talented at the same time. Well, maybe Spike Jonze could be. No, but I'm just you know, curious. Where's your
what kind of motivation?
I mean, it's a very I can't say very unique, because
now
that wouldn't be right.
No, I think you're a fan.
I am a fan. Yeah. I love this podcast. And where are you coming from?
I'm actually in Baltimore, Maryland right now.
Okay.
It's kind of just a fun way to get stories out there. A lot of the hard work is involved in just sifting through all of the crap that we get sent. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many bad writers out there, and we try and put out quality stories and kind of do it in a different way.
What percentage of bad stories do you have?
Oh, like 100%. 99.8 or so. And they're not all bad. A lot of them just aren't for us. Mm-hmm. I heard you guys talking about podcasts on your show not too long ago, and you nailed it right on it. There's just this really great new medium, and it's giving a lot of people opportunities to get their work out. And the cool thing is you can sell your reprints, too, if you're a writer. You know, it's a new format to make some more cash off of a story if it's told in audio, and you can just keep, you know, when you tell a story, you can tell it a different way. You can tell it to a different podcast, and they'll tell it a different way, and you know, you can keep selling it to different people in reprint form on audio.
And it's accessible.
So we do a little bit of that.
People can do it. I mean, it's like the average guy sitting around that doesn't really do much can actually get into something like this. I mean, your particular bent is you have this sort of really interesting kind of weird sort of subject matter.
Is that what happens? You get all these stories, you find the ones that are kind of gems, and that motivates you to have this kind of rich quality in your podcast?
Yeah, a lot of times it'll spark an idea. We also, the songs that we put on there are kind of a donor incentive. We have people, our podcast is completely supported by listeners. We don't put ads or anything in there. And people that give us big chunks of change, I'll kind of collaborate with them. They'll give me an idea and a style of music, and I call them Bartles, which is actually a rewording of the, or formatting the word Drabble, which is the 100-word story, which is kind of what our whole podcast is based off of, just short little nuggets of neat idea that are that come across in exactly 100 words. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a challenge. We have a weekly one of those, but the Bartles are kind of interesting songs that I put in there. And together, all these things come together to make kind of a strange hodgepodge of, you know, funny stuff, sometimes serious stuff. You never know kind of what you're going to get, and that's part of the appeal, I think, for some of our listeners.
Well, you're obviously a musician as well, quite accomplished, because there are some of those stories that, for example, Jelly Park, which is one of the podcast stories that was, to me, in particular, was an okay story. But when you added the music and the background, I mean, you made it great. I mean, it just became like an awesome story, and it was being carried or really reinforced by the background music that you put in. And I'm just curious, what kind of studio do you have, or what kind of software do you use?
Yeah, I think we kind of want to geek out on like how you actually physically do it.
Yeah.
You know, are you sitting?
Oh, sure.
Are you doing a one take kind of thing?
No. I have to experiment with a lot of different things. I use Pro Tools for editing software, and then I've also just, as far as the podcast goes, I found that the GarageBand, the stuff that comes kind of set up with Mac already, is to me I've almost gone back to that just because it's so easy and I can do things so quick. But yeah, as far as the music and things like that, I have kind of MIDI hook up into my computer, and I use Pro Tools for a lot of that stuff. And
you must have a huge library of sound effects.
Yeah, I do. And as far as the music, it's interesting that you mentioned that too, because it's so hard sometimes to get music that's affordable to license for production. So I do end up making a lot of it myself, because it's just easier that way than to try and find stuff that's there. There's some PodSafe music networks out there that I do use. But it just ends up being easier a lot of times to produce my own soundtracks to this stuff. And it kind of, if there's works in kind of a synergistic way, it makes the story kind of stronger, like you mentioned.
We're talking with Norm Sherman here on Geek Speak on KOSP. Norm Sherman is the creator and founder and inventor and artist of Drabblecast. Drabblecast is a wonderful, about half an hour, sometimes shorter, podcast every week that has short stories and music, and it's definitely a good listen to. And Drabble comes from the idea of a 100 words. So the Drabblecast has a special 100-word show piece. You also have a Twitter feed, which is 100 characters. Stories.
Yeah.
Can you, I know we're kind of putting you on the spot here, but I'd love to hear like a good 100 word story from you live. Would you mind?
Oh,
picking
yeah.
Picking one out?
Let me root around for a second.
Yeah, you go ahead and root around.
On my lap.
Yeah. What kind of cat?
Oh, an asshole. A big orange cat that's kind of, he's the one that wandered my door, and I've been taking care of him since.
Al's got a cat like that too.
Yeah. Curious, how would somebody submit a story to you? I mean, a lot of people are out there and they're listening.
And they might be good and they might be really bad.
I'm a pretty weird person and I write things sometimes. Maybe I should write to Drabblecast.
Hey, we'd love it. Yeah,
how would people...
our email, our submission email is drabblecast@yahoo.com. And we definitely don't target just big names. We love to have stories from everyday people that have talent, you know.
Yeah.
And actually, the 100 word stories are ones that I would recommend, because those are a little bit less competitive to get on the show, rather than the full length feature stories that we run.
Yeah, there's a lot of I think Santa Cruz is filled with people
that might do that. Yeah,
weird.
Well, if you'd like to write a 100 word story, you can do that by sending email. But good, just go to Drabblecast's website and you can send email through there to submit to Norm and see if it's good enough to get on the podcast. So let's hear one that's good enough to go on the podcast.
All right, I think I'm opening the folder here.
Okay, you've got like 125 of these, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you want? I was going to give you guys a fresh one here.
Oh, let's do fresh. Oh yes.
Never before.
Let's definitely do fresh. Go for it. Let's make sure there's no swearing in it, though, okay? It's a kid's show.
Yeah.
All right.
I was scanning it for that. This is actually one. We have a lot of, kind of our theme for the show is the giant squid. It's my particular favorite of the giant sea creatures, of which I'm obsessed. Mm-hmm. And so, giant megalodons and things kind of often make appearances in our show, either in kind of like a news fashion like you guys do with technology. But this is kind of one that's squid-related, and it's called Squid Ink. By Abby Hilton, who actually is a voice that occasionally comes on our show and reads for us, and she's got a couple books out.
Did she read the Toast episode?
What, excuse me?
Did she read Toast?
Yes.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
I like her readings. It's good.
Yeah, she's very, very talented. I'm actually reading another cool thing that authors are doing is podcasting their own novels and kind of building fan communities based on getting their work out for free in yeah. audio form.
Yeah, Scott Sigler did that, right?
Yeah, right. He was one Scott Sigler and Merlacity. A lot of people are doing that, and yeah. it's a neat way to come promote your own work. And she's in the process of doing that with one of her novels, and she's doing it in a full audio production with the background music and with yeah. different people in different voices.
Yeah, let me.
I'm reading one of the voices.
I just realized I'm not doing my job of acting as intermediary between tech and everyone else. So let me just say that, I mean, I think everyone understands what a podcast is, but it's basically an ability for you to update audio in a regular form. So if I say I have a new podcast like GeekSpeak and I give out this URL, there's multiple services like iTunes that you then can subscribe. And every time I release a new episode, if you will, your system downloads it and puts it on your MP3 player for you. So if you were to write a novel, for example, and then start reading the novel chapter by chapter and had people subscribe to you every week or whatever, whenever you updated it, they'd get a new chapter of your book. And from that, it's kind of a way to produce new types of work. We don't really talk about novels as a form, but I've listened to quite a few novels in this way, and it's nice. I like it. Mm-hmm. It's a great service for kids. If you got kids and you want them to hear stories, there's some wonderful podcasts out there for kids. Okay, so let's go ahead and hear this story, this 100-word story.
Thanks. It's called Squid Ink by Abby Hilton. I thought it would be cool to get a tattoo with real squid ink. The long tentacles curl around and around my arm, the suction cups a vivid purple. It ached for months. The artist said my immune system might react to the ink, but the pain has finally subsided. My girlfriend doesn't like my tattoo. She says there's something wrong with me. She left this morning with red welts on her shoulders and a cut lip. I feel fine. I look at myself in the mirror, open my lips, click my beak, and go off to find breakfast.
So are a lot of the stories kind of a sci-fi kind of horror kind of mix?
Oh, yeah, I think they fall into the big three, the sci-fi, the fantasy, and the horror. It's, it could be something completely ridiculous, kind of like Toast was, or it could be something that's kind of, a hardcore SF story.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you ever write yourself? Do you ever write any of these? Or
Oh, well, it's funny you should ask. Back in our early days, episodes, I'd say 1 through 20, when we're kind of getting our feet wet and I'm trying to figure out what podcasting is and my audio setup, we didn't have any real authors that were sending work to us. And so the three of us...
No one knew who you were, right?
Yes, so we wrote the stories, and they're, we would do it on a week-to-week basis until we started getting the ball rolling, and they're pretty bad, so we're glad that we have some actual real talent kind of sending into us now. It saves us a lot of trouble.
What is your day job? Because you must have a day job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I teach guitar, harsh, actually, and I do the musician thing.
So you're a musician?
Yes.
All right, so we're going to take calls now. If you'd like to ask our guest, Norm, about podcasting, about his podcast, if you know Drabblecast, now's your opportunity. The phone numbers are 476-2800. That's in the 831 area code, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. You are listening to KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have Jesse Wilkins and Al Luckow. And on the phone, we have Norm Sherman. And Norm is the producer and creator behind Drabblecast. I'm also going to invite you to call us in with just general tech questions because this is Geek Speak and we're here for you to help you out. So if you've got a problem with your computer, feel free to give us a ring. The phone numbers again are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. That's 1-800-655-KUSP. Norm, thanks for reading that. I kind of feel like I want to keep having you read them, especially if they're not they're not available on your podcast. But I guess we'll refrain from that. If you want to hear more of the stories, go ahead and go to Drabblecast and listen in. Norm, when you're editing this together and you need a new song, you're recording something you're playing. Let's say you just make it up on the spot. You get some music in there. You're starting to be your own little publishing company. You even, I guess, have enough content where you've got a second, like, backstage kind of podcast for Drabblecast. Are there ideas for you to do more and more of this kind of thing and maybe make it as your primary revenue?
I'm not sure. That's kind of, it would be neat, I think. It's a long way off. It was originally designed as kind of a supplementary way to kind of promote my music career. I do kind of a similar type of styling of music, kind of bluegrass type music that is completely ridiculous about, alien parasites. And I've got a song called Everybody's Got Nipples. And I've got one song that seems to be a hit with people about going on a date with a girl and everything's going fine. And then you're going into her kitchen, kind of rooting around while she's on the couch, and you discover a fetus inside of her kitchen drawer, and it just goes off from there. It's the experience of what would you do in this kind of situation, but they're all set to kind of a bluegrass background, and so it's very much in the Drabblecast mindset. It was kind of a parallel way to do that. I would often mention my CD, but it's kind of taken on a life of its own now. So Drabblecast has, so, and like my music stuff is kind of paralleling it.
Well, let's go ahead and take a call from Seaside. Darren, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, hi. I had sort of a technical question about podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that they're a subscriber system. Can you actually if you're producing a podcast, pre-set up when you want, like, say, the 20 podcasts to deliver to the end user?
Right, so you wouldn't have to, like, every day or something like that, update it.
Exactly.
Yeah, the way that you'd have to do that is, I mean, first off, what you could do, of course, is just publish all of them, and then most podcast lists allow you to look back in past episodes. So, for example, the Drabblecast right now up on through iTunes goes from episode 101 to 125. And I'm not sure if that's a choice by our guest or if that's... Norm, is that what you just wanted to start at 101 or...?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to throw some, like, 100 episodes at somebody right away.
Right,
so we
right.
usually have about 25 that somebody has they can subscribe to. And
can you get the back episodes? Like, can you go...
We have them archived, mm-hmm. and there's kind of a fan archive that's been created, and it's a separate feed that you can get all the back episodes with,
okay,
too.
Cool. So, Darren, the answer really has to do with the publishing software you have. I mean, like, for example, the GeekSpeak website's podcast is done all by me and Miles coding away at Java and Ruby, and... it's broken right now, and it doesn't have that feature, no. But a lot of these services do. The real trick would be to, I think I know Drupal pretty well, which is a web publishing system, and you can do a podcast and publish dates pretty easily with a certain plugin. So it really comes down to the software you're going to be using. Have you started doing a podcast yet, Darren?
I've done a few just experimental ones, but I'm thinking of some ones I want to do, and that was a question. I didn't want to have to... every day upload something.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily release every day at first until you've got enough listeners. Because one of the tricks about this is that if you have a podcast and there's 4 new episodes since last time your software ran, it'll only update the most recent. That's the default feature, right? So if you release every day, but I only start up my iTunes and my computer every 3 days, I won't get but every 3 episodes of your show. So you kind of need to figure out what the nice medium is, and I think one of the ways to do that is to do weekly is pretty good, maybe every other day or every 5 days. It depends on how popular you are,
yeah,
of
I
course,
can't,
as well.
I can't think of a daily podcast.
There aren't really that many.
I mean,
because of that problem.
That must be why it is, because most of them are weekly, you know. And
the ones you love, it's so frustrating.
Right.
You want it so
yeah.
bad.
See, I'm jealous of all those people out there right now who haven't heard Drabblecast because they've got like
100
episodes that they can listen to straight, where I got to wait a whole week to hear the next one.
Darren, what are you doing your podcasting on? Are you using WordPress or Drupal, or what are you doing? Do you know?
Oh, gosh. I took this class, and it was 2 years ago, and I forget even what it was.
Yeah. Okay, so what I would recommend is go ahead and get a WordPress installation at a site like Lunar Pages, right, Al? You use that?
I like Lunar Pages.
One. And you're going to get a WordPress installation, and WordPress allows you to publish in the future new entries, right? And you basically add the file. You've got to have the podcast feature of WordPress up and running. You just publish all your stories and just have them publish on a certain published date, and then when that date came around, your podcast would be updated that way. So that's pretty simple.
Excellent.
Good luck.
Thanks
and
so much.
And when
for
you
your
do
help.
Release your podcast in a public way, please send us a link about it, okay?
Sounds great.
Thanks, Darren. Bye.
Bye.
If you've got questions like Darren did from Seaside about podcasting or about computers in general, please feel free to give us a call. The phone numbers are 831-476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. That's 1-800-655-KUSP. So, Norm,
mm-hmm.
you're still here with us. Good. Thank you.
I am.
What podcast do you listen to?
I keep up with the fiction podcasts whenever I'm doing a commute, I listen to Escape Pod, one of my favorites, and Pseudopod. You know, I really like This American Life by NPR, one of my favorites. You guys had mentioned earlier, too, that there's so many podcasts. It's like they're like blogs. So there's a lot of crap out there, and you have to filter through.
Yeah.
But so I always download just groups of random ones to try and discover little gems. And I don't know if it's harder to do it that way, but I definitely would recommend Escape Pod and Pseudopod.
And podcasts, I would say, since we're talking about those
podcasts.
Ones. You know, Pseudopod, the only trouble with it is I recently moved into a large house, and sometimes I'm alone there, and I don't like to listen to Pseudopod when I'm alone. But Escape Pod is great. Pseudopod, of course, the horror one, Escape Pod, and we've talked about this before. But so you listen to those, and you listen to some NPR, of course, and you listen to Geekspeak, right? Regular listener.
Yeah,
of course.
In the whole podcasting community, it seems like, you know, when I listen to Escape Pod and I listen to these two, it seems like it's fairly close-knit in a way.
The
like,
stories show up on both.
Yeah, they show up in different places, and like everybody, like Mer Lafferty will read for somebody, and then, you know, Steve Ely will be on another reading. Is it like that now? I mean, Norm, do you know these other podcasters? Is there like a podcasting club or something that
get to the geeky sci-fi cons like Dragon Con and stuff, and we all go out and drink, and you get to know these people. Because to me, Steve Ely and Murr and these names that you hear, they're really the pioneers in this new audio fiction medium. And so a lot of us second-generation people, like myself, and there's a great podcast actually called The Dune Steve that's a fiction podcast.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that one too, yeah.
Yeah, that really like kind of looked up to these people and thought, you know, I can do that. I love telling stories, and we can maybe put our own bent on it. And if anything, it's good to have more markets that are buying fiction from writers and producing it, you know, especially since people keep saying the print markets are dying and whatnot. This is kind of a new way to kind of get stuff out. So, yeah, we definitely keep in touch with everybody. And I think these other people are normal people, too, and they really love having people come up to them and say, hey, you know, would you read for us? We really love your podcast and your inspiration to us and whatnot.
I think it is really a pioneering time. These people and these groups, you know, Norm, you included, and these that we're seeing right now, it's a time to recognize as an important movement that these people are accessible. There are ways into this.
To me, it feels a lot like the early days of radio, though I wasn't around, where you had a local community member doing something on the radio. Everyone was listening to it. You'd see them down at the coffee shop. You'd talk about
They'd be like normal people, as opposed to us. We're so famous.
That's
and
right.
So well known
I know.
That we have to put disguises on and have bodyguards just to go have a cup of coffee.
Just voice disguises. from Santa Cruz, we got a call off-air question from Bill talking about keeping an updated backup of your system and whether you can actually boot from it. He's talking about on a Mac. And we talked about Silver Keeper. We talked about Carbon Copy Cloner. Do we be able to do that? Is there something similar on a PC? Jesse, do you know? Mm-hmm. Meaning you have a complete copy of your hard drive the entire time, and then your hard drive fails, and you just boot off of that.
You know, personally, what I've done is I've used Norton Ghost as the software to create my images, and so I'll either clone one drive to another drive or clone a drive to an image file, a ghost image file. It's a snapshot of your
computer. Let's say if you did a second drive on like on a USB drive with Ghost, does it do incremental clones, or does it do full clones?
You know, I haven't used the newest version. I'm using version 8 corporate. And I only use it to duplicate drives. I don't actually use it as a backup.
Okay.
Per se,
what software. What about when you actually want to boot from that second drive? Do you have to replace it as the primary?
Yeah.
Okay. You can't like boot off of the USB.
Some computers support USB booting. Some don't. The easiest foolproof way to do it would be just swap your primary drive out with the backup drive. You know, and you're good to go. Obviously.
Or you could get a Macintosh.
Or you could clone with a Ghost.
Yes, indeed.
Norton Ghost is a good option.
And there's a Cronus, TrueImage, I think it's called. But then at that point, you could also, some of the home versions of that software will do like incremental backups.
Okay,
and
cool.
Keep your image up to date, or you could just use another backup software separately. And
great.
There's a lot of ways to do it.
So there you go, Norton Ghost, give it a shot. All right, from Illinois, Rob, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, hi.
Where are you calling from, listener. Rob? Oh, really?
I'm actually calling from Peoria, Illinois. I usually listen to your podcast, but I had a technical question. I figured I'd call you guys live.
Sure.
I want to do some video streams, video casts. My current digital camera, just a little $100 5 megapixel thing, takes video pretty decent, enough for what I want to do. The only problem is it always outputs to .mov file types, and I was trying to convert those so that I could manipulate them and put them in a more like an AVI format. I tried VLC LAN player. I think that has a convert feature, but
sure
it seems that I don't maybe have the proper codecs installed. Do you guys have any suggestions on conversion software?
Well, so MOV is actually a wrapper file format. It could be anything inside there.
Okay.
What's the tool that's actually creating this?
It's just my digital camera, little codec.
Codec.
Is it a Mac or a PC you're using?
I'm using Vista.
You're using Vista. Okay. So, yeah, you definitely need
switching to... Switching between Windows 7 and Vista.
Yeah, VLC is going to be the thing to do that with. The problem is that it's going to be... To get the exact settings is tricky. What editing software do you want to use for your video file?
Well, I was just going to just chop it up a little bit with the Windows default movie manipulator. Movie Maker, I think it's called.
Right, yeah. And you can't use that MOV file in Movie Maker?
It's not reading it in when
so
I
can
go
you,
to
can
file
you,
import.
Can you play that file at all on your computer?
Yeah, I can. When I open it with VLC, it plays.
Okay, Jesse, do you know a good, cheap, or free Windows editor?
I know a lot of video editor professionals.
Yeah.
But I've looked myself for the good, free software. I could have sworn I read about one recently called Super, but I'm not finding a search right now.
Can't you just take a QuickTime Pro? Well, it's QuickTime for Windows. And bring it into there and export from QuickTime? Because I know I've done that a zillion times. And, you know...
I've never done that on the Windows machine because I've never had the Pro version on the Windows machine.
But QuickTime
Pro might do it.
Now they're phasing out QuickTime Pro and just making it just QuickTime is going to have all the same features as QuickTime Pro.
Right.
But I think Windows still requires QuickTime Pro. And to get it to be a Pro version, it's like $20 or something.
Cheap,
it's not like, you know, oh, my God. It's because you can download the QuickTime Player free, but then you upgrade.
What we'll do, Rob, we're kind of running out of time on the show. I'm going to invite anyone that listens, especially podcasters that are listening on a Windows machine, a good free video editing software. Go up to the GeekSpeak forums, make a new post up there, and we'll just take this online, Rob. Is that cool?
That's great. Appreciate you guys' time.
Hey, Rob, thanks for calling in.
Go for it. I'm pretty sure I was reading recently on a Maxbone PC article about video converters, so take a look maybe through their website and see what they mention.
We are running out of time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob, so much. We're running out of time on GeekSpeak, but that's perfect for this show. Norm, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for producing what a wonderful podcast that you actually do.
Well, thanks for having me. And great.
You can learn
more. You guys
are
so smart.
What was that? We're smart? Thank you.
You guys are smart.
We're smart.
You can learn more about Drabblecast.
You're going like video editing, what?
You can learn more about Drabblecast up on his website, drabblecast.com. Is that right?
That's right.
.org. Thank you so much for coming and joining us on today, Norm. Take care.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Bye-bye. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Great Infusions Coffee Beanery and Espresso Machinery Showroom, offering artisan coffees, coffee makers, and specializing in home espresso machines, parts, and repairs. Located at 317 Petrero Street on the corner of River Street in Santa Cruz, or online at greatinfusions.com. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, streaming live and podcasting at KUSP.org. 30 seconds, Al, USB of the week.
Yeah, well, this one kind of sucks anyway. It's a teeny-weeny vacuum cleaner that you plug right into your keyboard. You plug it right in. I guess you could vacuum out all the Oreo crumbs that are inside your keyboard, which, not that we have crumbs in our keyboard. Of course not.
Oreos,
we're geeks.
No.
We never, ever eat at our computers, ever. That will never happen. So there's no use to ever have a little teeny-weeny vacuum cleaner that you can plug in.
How small is it?
It looks like a little tiny upright vacuum cleaner. It's about 3 inches tall. I mean, it looks like a little vacuum cleaner.
And when the GeekSpeak website's up, you can learn about it there.